Hello and welcome to the Majlis Podcast, Radio Free Brida Liberty's current affairs talk show focusing on Central Asia. I'm Mohammed Tahir, host of the Majlis and Radio Free Brida Liberty's media manager here in Washington, D.C. On this platform, as we are closely monitoring and assessing Russia's war on Ukraine in the context of its implications for Central Asia, we recently came across another disturbing allegation about recruitment and subsequent deployment of Central Asian migrant workers in Russia to Ukraine as part of the Russian military invasion. Examples are still anecdotal, but we are seeing growing evidence to that end. And there are discussions about the circumstances in which those migrant workers are recruited and the reasons behind why they end up in the battlefield. So in this episode of the Majlis podcast, we decided to take a deeper look into this development and try to make sense of what is going on and where all this is headed going forward. To discuss all these, I'm joined by Shir Hashimov, freelance journalist and the co-author of a recent Moscow Times report discussing Central Asians in the front lines of Russia's war in Ukraine. My colleagues, Alisher Siddiq, the director of Radio Free Brida Liberty's Uzbek service, who broke this story a couple of days ago, Salim John Ayubov, the director of Radio Free Brida Liberty's Tajik service, whose team just reported about the body bags of Tajiks arriving from Ukraine to Tajikistan, and Bruce Panier, a prominent Central Asia analyst. Thank you, colleagues, for joining us on this very important conversation. So let me start with you, Alisher. As was reported by your team a couple of days ago, the discussion about this topic started from a video clip of an Uzbek man driving a Russian military truck in Donetsk, Ukraine, and in that he was explaining why he was there and what was going around him. And then we know you have reached out to this truck driver and spoke to him and several others who are familiar with the backstory. So why not you start the conversation, Alisher, by telling what you heard from this man and what was your assessment of what was going on?
Thank you so much, Mohammed Tahir. Yes, indeed, there was an Uzbek labor migrant who bragged on a phone, sharing the video in a group, apparently a group of his friends on Telegram, where he's featuring himself in a truck, saying that he's heading towards Ukraine, and also claiming that this is a good opportunity, and basically wishing good luck to everyone. Then the video circulated in the social media. It caused a lot of discussion and debate. We tracked the guy down, and we found his phone number. Right. We called him. So evidently he was very disturbed, very afraid of the ramification of this. I mean, he didn't realize that that video would go viral so much.
So, Alisher, Alisher, just at one point there. So he was disturbed because the video went viral and he was afraid of the circumstances, or he was disturbed because where he ended up?
No, he was very much afraid of, as he later told us, about his family in Uzbekistan, because during the first military campaign of Russia to the Donbas region, there were incidents related to migrants joining the army. Back then, Uzbek government introduced a criminal punishment for joining foreign military operations and just serving in any foreign security service. So it's a punishable crime up to 5 years. And we have lost the contact with him after that to know to how extent his family members were contacted by the Uzbek security services. But he said that his family was already approached by the security services, and of course they would be very much interested in him, because it's definitely something that Uzbek government doesn't like, you know. Mm-hmm. Later, he appeared in another video, apparently after being pressured so much, where he completely denied his own video, saying it was a joke, I wasn't in Ukraine, it was Moscow, so I was just joking to my friends, and that went viral. But we know that it wasn't a joke, because we talked to him, you know, in a separate interviews, which is all recorded. So where he explained the reasons, and the reasons, of course, I'm sure we're going to talk about it
certainly
in detail. Yeah, where he said he was incentivized, how to say it, like he received incentives to do so. We even tracked down the organization that actually promoted this.
Mm.
And then how he ended up as a contractor
Right.
of a company that has a contract with the Defense Ministry of
Right,
Russia.
right, right. Yeah, we are going to talk about all these details in terms of what goes on behind the door in terms of, you know, before they actually end up in places like Ukraine. So just to kind of do a couple of reality check thing here, Shir, on Ali Shir's note, you and dear friend Colin Wood had a terrific follow-up story on this in the Moscow Times last week, where you guys go beyond the truck driver and kind of pinpoint a couple of other evidences which points us to Ukraine with regards to Central Asian migrant workers' involvement in this war. Tell us, please, what are the other evidences we have in this?
There's a lot of circumstantial evidence pointing to the Russian government recruiting Central Asian migrants in Russia to serve in its war in Ukraine. Some of the evidence that we found, first of all, a Ukrainian newspaper, Ukrainian Pravda, leaked a list of 120,000 Russian soldiers currently fighting in Ukraine. The list is huge. It's 6,500 pages. It includes military personnel names, registration numbers, and places of service. And while that list has not been verified independently, it comes from a reputable outlet that has a history of finding this sort of information in the past. And basically, we look through that list, 6,500 pages. And if you look for specifically ethnically Central Asian names, for example, for Tajikistan, we search for Tajik roots like Bobo or, you know, Salim and things like that. And if you do that, there are multiple names that pop up that are clearly Central Asian names, right? Another evidence that we have, we spoke to the civil rights activist, Valentina Chupik. Chupik is a very famous advocate for migrants' rights in Russia. She became such a nuisance to the Russian government for her work defending labor migrants in Russia that in 2021, she was essentially kicked out of Russia because of her staunch work defending migrants. So she's well known in the migrant circles in Russia, and she told us that she has been receiving dozens and dozens of calls from Central Asian migrants in Russia telling her that they're being coerced into serving in Russian army in Ukraine. Along with that, we have reports from our colleagues from the RFERL Uzbekistan, RFERL Kyrgyzstan, and Tajikistan about certain individuals appearing to be serving in the Russian army in Ukraine. So there's a lot of circumstantial evidence that points out that it's probably true.
You know, one of the clear evidence is, of course, you know, body bags are arriving to countries in Central Asia. And Salim Jan, your team has been reporting about this week. Tell us, please, about the content of your reporting in terms of those Tajik citizens, I guess, in this case, Tajik citizens dead in the battlefield in Ukraine and their dead bodies were brought back to Tajikistan.
Yeah, we had a report about that. However, the first one, the 50-year-old Said Akbar Saidov, was killed on March 17, and the second one on March 21st. But both brought on March 22nd. Actually, we received information about four bodies, but there was unconfirmed information from our sources that that day almost 15 bodies were brought to Tajikistan by Russian-based officers. But what is hampering our job that neither relatives nor officials, no one is eager to talk about them. Probably it could have many different reasons. First of all, we know that authorities are always successful in convincing relatives not to talk to media. And second, maybe those relatives themselves are reluctant to talk to media about those killed because it's actually uncomfortable and a bit embarrassing for them because day and night Tajik state media is talking, singing, dancing about a glorious country of Tajikistan, about national values and so on. And on this background, maybe it's uncomfortable for them to talk that why those their sons killed in a war 1,000 kilometers away. Yeah. And even from the religion point of view, we are receiving some comments that users are writing that they're blaming actually those who are participating in this war. Yeah, sure is right. We also received this list of Russian soldiers with their registration numbers and so on. However, what's interesting, the names of those who buried in Tajikistan were not on this list. This is first. Second, maybe about names that they are real people. They were in Tajikistan working closer to with the Russian militaries during the civil war. Mm. Actually, you know, the Tajiks have always been part of the Russian army, you know.
Yeah, Selim, yeah. You are cutting off, but hopefully we are not missing a huge chunk of what you are saying here. What I was thinking about is when you were talking about, like you said, those names, the ones whose dead bodies were brought to Tajikistan, was not found on that list. So I'm just wondering, how do we know those people whose dead bodies were brought back actually killed in Ukraine?
So those bodies were delivered to the relatives by representatives of the Russian base in Tajikistan, and the officers of the Russian base handed papers to their relatives and told them what happened and told them that the families of those guys are eligible for the help of Russian government or Russian kind of compensatory payment and so on. No, we have no doubt that those, at least two of them, it's verified information that they killed in the Ukraine. Mm. But we have been receiving more news that even from migrant communities also there. Just 3 days ago in Chelyabinsk, the Tajik diaspora buried a 24-year-old Omer Davlatov, who is son of Tajik migrants who moved to Russia several years ago. Mm-hmm.
Very, very interesting. I know, you know, we are just touching the surface of the bigger story here, but my intention in this part was just to kind of do a reality check on those Central Asians joining the battle. But there is equally important backstory, as both Selim Jan and Ali Sher, you guys hinted, and we are going to talk about that in terms of how the process works, how they end up in Ukraine. Certainly, we are going to get to that. But before, so Bruce, let me invite you to jump in here. I mean, like Tajikistan, we also heard report, at least in one case, one dead body arrived to Kyrgyzstan. And apparently the guy was Russian citizen, but he was ethnic Kyrgyz. And I guess we heard about this week. So tell us, please, what else we know about this case.
Yeah, I mean, they say he was a Russian citizen, but that appears to have happened very recently. You know, from the reports that I looked through, he just got to Russia sometime last year. He had only obtained, so he would have obtained citizenship after that. His mother was already working in Russia, so that's probably what got him there in the first place. But somehow or another, he ended up, I don't know if he found a job or what, but he was in Norilsk, way up north in Russia. And then 4 months ago, he joined the military, the Russian military, of course, you know. So, I mean, he was a Russian citizen, and so therefore he was, I suppose, fair game. You know, he's 19 or 20 years old, so he would have been eligible for the draft, without a doubt. It's unclear why he went into the army, but like I said, it only happened like 4 months ago, and he couldn't have been a Russian citizen that long either. So, but yes, he was definitely killed, and his body is, I don't know if they've actually brought it back yet, but it's supposed to be brought back to the base. That's the Collective Security Treaty Organization at base in Kyrgyzstan, but actually it's under Russian command. But we know, you know, and they know for a fact that he died in Ukraine. I mean, they're describing him as having died a heroic death and all that stuff. So it's very clear that that's where he was killed. You know, like I said, I've seen the reports that say he was a Russian citizen born in Kyrgyzstan, but he appears to have been a Kyrgyz citizen until, you know, just even a year ago. But it's one definite case of a Kyrgyz citizen being killed, and really young. You know, I mean, Selim John was talking about the two bodies that came home, and the one guy was 50 years old. You know, whereas, like I said, this guy, the Kyrgyz guy, seems to have been 19. You can see the spectrum of people that are getting caught up in this and sent off to Ukraine as part of the Russian military.
very interesting. I mean, we are talking about some of the anecdotal examples here, like, for example, a couple of people that we have seen, we were able to confirm that dead bodies arriving back to those countries. In the case of Tajikistan, Selimjan was talking about this, and also in Kyrgyzstan. You know, probably we don't have clear picture of the human cost of this at this stage. You know, no surprise. I mean, how we know, I mean, even Russia doesn't report about the losses in Ukraine. So how Central Asians will even know about the casualties of their own citizens who might have gone there from Russia? Because of course, we have to treat every piece of information we receive with caution. There's a lots of misinformation is also going on this topic. But given there are millions of Central Asian migrant workers, and given the fact that Vladimir Putin, I guess, has actively urged the recruitment of foreigners into the Russian military, especially to Donetsk region, there is no surprise we are getting these kind of reports. So Bruce, also, we heard from all of our colleagues, Selimjan and Alisher and Sher, what we heard. What does it tell you in terms of how deeply Central Asians are pulled into this?
Well, depending on which reports you want to believe, it seems like the Russian military got desperate pretty early on to bring in more troops, even though it seemed, there was stories that said they had 190,000 soldiers ringed around parts of Ukraine. You wouldn't have thought they would have needed extra troops, but their performance so far has been pretty bad. Hmm. And it just kind of shows that they need more soldiers. That said, you also have to remember, too, that a lot of the people generally in militaries around the world, but certainly in a place like Russia, they're drawn from poorer families.
Yeah.
Kids from affluent Russian ethnic Russian families probably have there's like a dozen ways at least to get out of military service. So a lot of people get out of military service, and it's left, unfortunately, to poor families, or in this case, migrant laborers or anyone they can pull in, so that they have bodies out there, can fill up the brigades and divisions and everything. And I think they just figured that Central Asians were fair game, even if they're migrant laborers. There's also reports that, people from the Northern Caucasus region of Russia are huge numbers of them are also in the Russian military that's in Ukraine right now. But like I said, it seems like Russia, one, underestimated how bad this would be. And then, two, right away decided that they needed to get as many people into the military as possible for duty. And this was one of the ways they hit on, was just to go out to the migrant laborers who a lot of them are easily intimidated, right?
Yeah.
Scher's article pointed out that they bring these people in and tell them, you have to do this, especially if they want Russian citizenship or they just got Russian citizenship or something. And they say, you got to join the military or else, which is not right, but they don't know that.
On
the paper.
Yeah, there is a lot to talk about on that aspect. And certainly, we are going to do that. Alisher, just one last point before we move on in terms of to talk about the reasoning behind that. So I guess it was maybe my impression, or maybe there was a actual reporting in the report that you published last month, driven by this truck driver's comments and your subsequent interview with him. I guess my impression was that it is not only Russia where Central Asians are fighting. I guess there are some Central Asians on the Ukrainian side of the battle too?
Yeah, of course. This is, and these are completely different type of people, because they're going and joining Ukrainian military with a completely different set of reasons. So one of the guy we talked to, an Uzbek guy, he used to be a blogger and writing a lot about Russian aggression, and joined Ukrainian army just after arriving there immediately. So without any, let's say, personal benefits. And that's a different people. And we talked to one of them, and he even openly discussed that he doesn't afraid of going back to Uzbekistan. I mean, obviously they would not be able to do so. They give their reasons, motivation for that. And they believe Russia should be stopped and Ukrainians should be helped. Yeah, these are very small number of people, I guess. And they basically openly say, totally realize how it is viewed in Uzbekistan by the government.
Very, very interesting. So, even the bigger question is, why on earth do you really go there in the first place? In case of Central Asians allegedly recruited by the Russian side, it seems to be there are some answers, but also lots of confusion. So let's continue the discussion talking about the cause, the reason behind why Central Asians are taking this dangerous route. First, let me recap the debate that today on the Majlis podcast. I'm joined by Sher Hashimov, a freelance Central Asian journalist originally from Tajikistan, Alisher Sadiq, the director of Radio Free Press Liberty's Uzbek service, who is from Uzbekistan, Selimjon Ayubov, the director of Radio Free Press Liberty's Tajik service, who is also from Tajikistan, and Bruce Panier, a prominent Central Asia analyst, who is about to launch a Central Asia weekly newsletter. And I am Mohammed Tahir, Radio Free Press Liberty's media manager and host of the Majlis podcast here in Washington, D.C. And we are discussing Central Asians in the front lines of Russia's war in Ukraine. So on the questions of front lines, though, maybe Alisher, you are the right person to talk about this. Obviously, the cases of Tajik and Kyrgyz men who died in the battlefield, it gives you an impression that they were part of the battle in this or the other way, maybe perhaps in the front lines. But in the case of this truck driver that we were talking about earlier, it seems to me that he was recruited to help in logistics. He was saying there are more people from Central Asia around him. So what do we know, Alisher, from your conversation with this man or the other people that you spoke in your report about what those people are recruited for?
Yeah, we had a pretty good verified information from the previous Russian campaign to Ukraine, you know, since 2014. And we had also reports about death of Uzbeks on the front lines. We even interviewed one guy back then. Mm. So, but particularly the latest case, he's a driver.
Yeah.
And he's working for a company, state company, which is a contractor for the defense ministry. Mm. So you can imagine the scale of this invasion. And of course, Russia would need to employ a lot of people behind the battleground. So they need some people who drive, they need some logistics, they need maybe some constructions, and maybe even cooking of food. So my guess that this guy, he was not intended to be physically drawn into the battle, but to be a part of this invasion. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't diminish his role, I mean, in general.
Obviously. But one of the human rights activists, I guess you were talking in your report, Alisher, she says that these people are used, what's the right term for it, as a human shield or something? And she was just saying this like just to say it, or maybe she had some basis to claim that this is the purpose behind all this, recruitment process of Central Asian migrant workers?
Yeah, I mean, again, we need to look into concrete things in order to give, a wider claim of the scale of recruitment of migrant workers. So far as we know, the law is not officially went into force that was initially proposed by Kremlin that would allow to get citizenship in return of your service in the Russian army. But there are a lot of speculations and claims that though there's no law, it's still a big help to move forward your applications for citizenship. So currently, only permanent residents of Russia, though they can have a Central Asian passport, can be recruited. So they can be recruited, and of course, their application for citizenship will be sort of expedited based on that. But I still believe that Russians still are keeping this as an option for future, because obviously there's a big trouble, which is now surrounding labor migrants. You know, they can be incentivized even more because they lost their jobs, because ruble doesn't cost anything. So the scale is still limited because this potential is still untapped. And some even said, I was going through the comments and, what people are, how people are reacting. Some people even say, even those migrants, we would go even for less. Not for citizenship, but for payment or for, let's say, for the so-called license to work in Russia, which also costs something. So it's still the kind of a potential that the Russian government can materialize.
But
it's very worrying that those whom we see now are just the first, let's say, first signs of that policy.
Yeah. On that, I guess in your report, and also share in your report, the human rights activist that we are talking about here, her name, I forgot her name. I'm just...
Valentina Chupik?
Yeah, yeah. I think she was saying the idea, the whole idea of the promise of citizenship is anyway a false pretext, at least this is how I understand it. But this was one of a couple of incentives, I guess, the way I understand it from your reporting. One is obviously like this truck driver was talking about. He was bragging about, you know, how much money he was paid to get there, to go to Ukraine, for example. The obviously money, as Alisher was talking about, you know, in this kind of, you know, financially uncertain era that Russia is in. So obviously money could be one way to lure those people into this thing. And also, I guess, again, I saw this on your report, share is there was a one Kyrgyz man saying something on his Instagram channel. Correct me if I misunderstood him. My Kyrgyz is still improving. So he was saying, I guess, those who have Russian passport leave the country to avoid recruitment. This is what he was saying. If this is what I understand correctly, it looks like there is also some kind of fear element to it that you might be just pulled into whether you want or not.
That's right. Yes. Yeah. So the social media report that you're referring to, it was a TikTok video by an account called Kyrgyz Nation, where the speaker in the video in that account essentially warns of the possibility that Kyrgyz migrants could be called up, drafted into the Russian army. And he essentially implores them to leave Russia and go back to Kyrgyzstan to avoid that sort of fate. In terms of the fear factor, I'll take a step back and say this. It is important to understand the role the Russian citizenship plays in this entire dilemma. Mm-hmm. Central Asian migrants, millions of them go to Russia every year to in search of employment, in search of income, because Central Asian economies cannot support them, cannot provide them with those things, right? Mm-hmm. And then when they get to Russia, they face daily discrimination, daily harassment, wage theft, massive bureaucracy, even threats from law enforcement and from the government. And in order to deal with those daily pressures, they hunt after the Russian citizenship, because the Russian citizenship helps alleviate those daily frictions of living in Russia. That's the desire that the Russian government is exploiting in this situation. Those migrants who don't have the citizenship yet, they have only permanent residence in Russia, for example, they are promised the citizenship. But those who do have a citizenship are facing a threat of that citizenship being revoked if they do not respond to the Russian government's call to serve in Ukraine. Because many Central Asian migrants are so desperate to receive the Russian citizenship, understandably so, that they hire third parties to help them with their applications. Those third parties, because they're interested only in profit, they cut corners, they bribe officials, they forge documents. And once you receive a citizenship, if your underlying application has those forged documents and bribed officials, it makes you vulnerable to lose your citizenship, right? Because the Russian government could say, hey, listen, we know you have this mistake in your application. If you don't show up to the draft, we will just revoke your citizenship. And that's just, it puts the Central Asian migrants in this impossible situation where they could lose the citizenship that they spent years working for and go back to Central Asia to do what? There are no jobs there for them.
Selimjan, earlier, you were also referring to some of the discussions in those social media channels among the Tajik migrant workers in Russia. What they are talking about in terms of the incentives, the reasons why they do what they do in terms of joining the Russian military and going to Ukraine. What are they driven by?
There are several type of, let's say, several group of users pushing ahead different ideas. First of all, as I mentioned, that those who are very religious, they are condemning war and they are asking others not to participate in this war. Some of them are talking about that this is unjust war when one country just entered another country and things like this. And the second group who thinks that since they received Russian citizenship, so they should go when the government, as Cher mentioned, called them up to go. because if you ask for the citizenship, so you are liable for the military service to, mm-hmm. to this country, because you are going through the all procedures and declare that you will be loyal to this country, yeah. and so on. And the third group of users, they say that they're ready to go voluntarily to fight for Russian cause, because they think Russia is right. They think Putin is doing the right thing. So those three different groups. But overall, the Tajik society, I mean, in both in Tajikistan and those who are in Russia. By the way, just last year, around 70,000 Tajik citizens received Russian citizenship. Mm-hmm. And I should tell the audience that Tajikistan and Russia have dual citizenship law. But until recently, when a lot of Tajiks went to Syria and Iraq, and the Tajik parliament adopted a law that whoever will fight foreign war should be punished up to 20 years in prison. And just recently, they probably not without a Russian hint, changed the law and adopted and amended it, telling that if it's about those who have also Russian citizenship, depends on their will or something like this. But overall, in the two parts, and just recently we had a very good debate show when one side completely condemned Russian actions in Ukraine, and the second part fiercely defended that. So this is what we can see in Tajikistan. But what is interesting, whoever defends Ukraine cause, they are mostly those who are opposed to the current government. And those who support Russian war in the Ukraine, they fear supporter of the government. Yeah. So this kind of thoughts are brewing in the Tajik society.
Interesting dynamic there. Alisher, earlier you were also talking about this online channels which are kind of facilitating this process. Like, what was that? One of this was migrant or something? And I guess you guys are also reached out to him.
Yeah, when we contacted him, he immediately began denying that he has nothing to do with that, of course. So, but yeah, there are a lot of social media sort of let's say groups and channels where people exchange views, and that's also a dangerous part of it. So people just can get hooked without any knowledge and about any understanding of what's going on. So that's, the guy even said that he announced that, and that was he was citing a new law, but he was trying to help migrants.
So the call that he put out was like, hey guys, if you want to join Russian military to go to Ukraine, and there's an element in the Russian law which would speed up
your citizenship. Yeah, he was referring to the law, saying that that would allow you to speed up your citizenship application process.
This question is kind of for everyone. Like, we have spoken to numerous sources for this reporting. Obviously, you guys have done a lot of them. So, of course, there is no concrete data in terms of what size and scope and figure we are talking about in terms of the involvement of Central Asian migrant workers in Russia, in Russia's war in Ukraine. Any estimate that we can throw here? I mean, are we talking about hundreds, thousands?
Look, you remember we've done a lot about people like migrants leaving to Syria or Iraq, to join these extremist groups.
Yeah.
And for example, that part is also, let's say, it's illegal, it's a terrorist organization, it promises you nothing but the havens, right?
Yeah.
And imagine you have millions of labor migrants in Russia and you do something legal that state authorized. So you can get paid, you can get citizenship. So the scale would be comparable, I guess, because if this genie will be released from a bottle, then it can be huge, let's say, infusion to Russia's army.
Yeah.
But I would be cautious at this moment to say that this is a massive, this is something which is offered widely. Because for that, we would need to see some recruitment points where migrants can be lining up. So we don't see that yet. And we hopefully will never see that.
In the eyes of the Central Asian authorities, I mean, it's kind of, again, open question, maybe Shir, Salim, John, Bruce. In the eyes of the Central Asian authorities, going to Ukraine on behalf of Russia and fighting is an illegal act, and it's punishable by the local laws of those Central Asian migrant workers, I believe. Salim John.
As I mentioned, the amendment of the law, no. Whoever have dual citizenship and participate in foreign war, they will not be charged. But
what
going
about
back
migrant
to
workers?
For the time being, maybe we can talk about maybe hundreds, I think, because we have been receiving a lot of videos, a lot of materials. Unfortunately, it's hard to verify them. Mm. It's difficult. But for example, I will tell you, just yesterday we received a video that two Russian soldiers are helping an either Russian or Ukraine old woman in some part of Ukraine, and around them we have seen a lot of damages made by war. And those two guys are talking in Shugni dialect of Pamiri language. And they are talking what to do and how to do. However, it couldn't be find out that either they are fighting on side of on Russian side or the Ukrainian side. So now, and a lot of others, probably you have seen on a Twitter that a video that of the first prisoner of war who told those who were interrogated him that he is from Tajikistan. So now maybe we are talking about hundreds, but as we're seeing that the war is going to nowhere when the Russian army is just sitting around the cities and bombing them from distance, and it has some logistic problems and so on. Maybe in the future it will be growing. Why? Because we shouldn't forget that migrants are oppressed nation. Migrants are those who are doing a very dirty job and without any safety measures and so on. Every year, about 1,000 Tajiks bodies have been delivering from Russia to Tajikistan. Those migrants, some of them was killed by skinheads, another one just fall down from the high building and so on. Yeah. So those migrants are oppressed nation, and when the Russian authorities will decide to strengthen their military forces using migrants, so they can do it easily.
Right. So, Bruce, I have two questions here, and obviously we are going to wrap up the conversation just in a minute here. One question is, we are talking about this, and these type of anecdotal examples are on social media here and there, everywhere. Have you seen anything Central Asian authorities are doing about this or trying to do anything about this?
No, I haven't, you know, actually at all. I mean, in the case of the Kyrgyz, the young Kyrgyz guy that was killed, at least local officials were willing to say, yeah, he was from here and we're sorry this happened and stuff. But top officials don't seem to want to acknowledge that this is going on at all. You know what I mean? A minute ago, you asked, they said, well, why, you know, that they're in danger of like being sent to jail, prison or something if they go home after fighting. Yeah. But, you know, technically they're citizens of Russia. So one, chances are they probably aren't going home, you know, even if they survive what's happening in Ukraine. But two, you know, like I said, they're citizens of Russia at this point. So they haven't broken any Russian law by being part of the Russian military that's in Ukraine. As long as they're not going to reclaim citizenship back in Central Asia, there's really nothing you can do.
I also understand there are migrant workers among them, like migrant workers in a way, like they are not yet Russian citizen. Maybe they have permanent residence or maybe illegal migrant workers, isn't it?
Well, you know, I mean, as we've heard here, I think that part of the deal for them to join the Russian military was that they would get fast-tracked for Russian citizenship.
But not yet citizen, right?
I imagine a lot of them believe that's true.
Now, what I'm saying, but, you know, that also kind of gives me an impression that they are not yet citizen. If they are joining Russian military in the hope and anticipation of getting Russian citizenship on fast track, so they are not yet citizens. Maybe Sher Hashimov, maybe you worked on this topic more than we did. I mean, the legal status of those people, the ones who are joining, at least to the extent we know. Are they only two Central Asian migrant workers who are Russian citizens, or among them you see with the status of permanent residency, or maybe with the illegal status, that they don't have any status yet?
The Russian government is targeting both those who already have the Russian citizenship with threats of, taking away that citizenship unless the Central Asian migrants respond to the call. But also the Russian government is targeting those migrants who do not have a citizenship yet, who are still on a permanent residence permit and who want to receive the citizenship. And for them, the allure is a fast-track application. Yeah. As far as illegal migrants being coerced into serving in the Russian army, I don't think I've seen any definitive reports that could prove that.
Okay. We really need to wrap up. Bruce, is there anything we missed talking about today? Of course, there are so many different aspects, elements that we need to be talking about. But for the purpose of this conversation, is there anything that we have missed and we should raise before wrapping up the conversation?
No, I mean, I think you covered pretty much everything. You know, obviously, the reaction back home and how that's going to play out in coming weeks will be interesting, too. If bodies keep coming back.
Yeah.
There's so little connection for Central Asia to what's happening in Ukraine. This will be growingly unpopular. Why are Central Asian citizens dying, so John said, thousand kilometers away in a European war again?
Yeah, in someone else's war. And also, maybe just the final question here, people who really monitor this conversation on those online channels that perhaps we miss and we don't have access to, from that conversation, maybe Ali Sher, Salim John, from that conversation in those, you know, back channel online platforms, what's your impression that where is this thing going forward? Where your eyes are going to be to determine where is this going from what you hear in those channels?
You know, generally, the bigger realization, the bigger eye-opening reality is that migrants, they gradually know that Russia will no longer be a place where they can earn money. So this is a big thing. And the talks that earning back in Uzbekistan is now better than staying in Russia. This is one big topic. The other big topic is that after the war finished, they need many look to Ukraine, where a lot of construction workers might be needed, you know, after what happened there. So maybe Ukraine is a future destination for Uzbek labor migrants in that context. But that's what we hear.
Salim John, any thoughts on that? I mean, particularly what I was interested to hear is, like, you know, from we're talking obviously in the context of Central Asians being recruited and sent to Ukraine. From that context, I mean, what's your impression from those online conversation and those Instagram and, I don't know, Facebook or whatever channels that people talk about this? What is your feeling? What people are talking about? And based on that, where we are headed after this stage?
I completely agree with Ali Sher. He mentioned two very big aspects, but I need to add that in terms of eye-opening, yes, it helps migrants to understand what is going on around them. For example, if their son is killed in this war, or son was recruited or called up to go to war, this have also an impact on them to understand why they received Russian citizenship and what will happen next and things like this. And also, even just a few days ago, I came across with the comment that a guy is saying that, just thanks God I didn't apply for citizenship. I was thinking I collected all the documents and I was going to apply for the Russian citizenship, but now I stop all the procedures. I will not do that, you know. And yeah, of course, they will either. Ali Sher mentioned that there will be no jobs for them. Already those sanctions are closing a lot of entities, a lot of enterprises, and they are losing jobs. So there will be no reason for them to stay in Russia, and they're looking for other countries.
Is there anything, Sher, Bruce, you want to add very briefly, and then we will wrap up the conversation with that? I mean, I'm just trying to get your thoughts on what the future discussion is going to look like in this.
I guess from my side, I had some informal conversations with low-level state employees in Tajikistan. And to me personally, I'm very curious about the position the governments in Tajikistan and Kyrgyzstan will have on this issue, because from one side, they're facing the pressure to condemn the participation of their citizens in foreign conflicts. But from the other side, neither of those countries can support hundreds of thousands of their citizens coming back and looking for employment in their countries. Tajikistan just does not have employment opportunities, does not have the social services to support all those people. And so in kind of a very perverse way for the government, it is not good to have all the citizens sort of come back, you know. And so I think that sort of puts the governments in a very weird position of like, what do we do? What side of the issue do we fall on here?
Yeah, obviously, regardless of the number of their citizens fighting in Ukraine on behalf of Russia, the war itself obviously is devastating for, obviously, to Russia, to Ukraine, and also all those countries which relies on Russian economy and Russian on so many different ways. Bruce, final thoughts from you?
You know, it looks like this conflict or the war is going to drag on for a while now. And I think that these cases that we've been talking about today are the first of what will probably end up being hundreds if this keeps going. You know, migrant laborers and people looking for fast track citizenship and stuff be drawn into this more and more. And, you know, if recent history is any precedent, maybe a lot of people in Central Asia won't want to go to Russia to do, you know, as migrant laborers, and maybe some that are there will come back. But, you know, in 2008, when there was a global economic crisis, they stayed. And when the first separatist campaign on Ukraine happened in 2014, they stayed, and they stayed when the price of oil went down and the Russian economy was in bad shape, you know, in 2015, 2016. So I imagine, you know, millions are still going to stay, and they're going to be, unfortunately, at risk of being, certainly the young men will be at risk of being dragged into this.
Yeah. A couple of days ago, we have seen, you know, Minister Shoigu talking about, like, what's that, like 16,000 Syrians willing to come to Russia to take part in this conflict on behalf of Russia or something. So there is already sort of a precedent that they are opening the door for even people who are far away from that region could join the conflict. But let's see where the conflict goes. Let's see what kind of ideas Russia has about Ukraine, about Ukraine's future. I mean, currently it looks like, you know, the Russian military is stuck. But let's see what we will be talking about in 2-3 weeks from now. So here with this, we have to conclude the conversation. So thank you very much, Shir Khashimov, a freelance Central Asian journalist, Alisher Sadiq, the director of Radio Free Press Liberty's Uzbek service, Selimjon Ayubov, the director of Radio Free Press Liberty's Tajik service, and Bruce Panier, a prominent Central Asia analyst. Thank you very much, colleagues, for joining us today. And this is it from me, Mohammed Tahir, host of the Majlis Radio Free Press Liberty's current affairs talk show focusing on Central Asia. Until next week, bye-bye.